ladies and gentlemen, Kimmy Gable.
Appearance here in New York City before I go to LA, so I decided I'm gonna sing their theme song live. Yeah! live, Jordan.
Got it.
Okay, Comic Book Club.
Thank you to Kimmy Gatewood, and thank you to Jordan in the booth.
Yeah.
Thank you once again, Jordan, assistant editor at Marvel, taking over for our regular booth man.
Trying to make a big
career.
Back here,
you guys?
Yeah.
She wrote the theme song that usually plays, so it's nice to have it done.
Yeah, she explained that.
Jordan, congratulations on your promotion to our booth man.
Thank you very much.
That's going really well for you. By this time next week, you're probably going to be a garbage man somewhere.
Hooray!
Yay.
No offense to the garbage man in the crowd.
We have a lot of guests tonight, so yes, I think we're just going to bring them all out. Very excited.
I know. If you want to check out what happened on Pete's honeymoon, he has a lot of pictures on his blog, which is too much in my mind. Too many pictures.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to get
What's
so detailed.
What's the website address?
Huh? Snicked at erotica.com.
That's a weird website. Let's welcome out our guests, everybody. I'm very excited to have them here.
Yeah.
Kimmy Gatewood, Matt Tyler, and Tucker Sanders. Now, Matt and Kimmy, you're leaving town forever.
That's right.
That's spaceship.
Yeah. And you guys have been on the show probably more than any combined, more than any other guests we had.
So. Right, but that's also still like the pie chart, still like Kimmy is the Pac-Man and I'm like the pie slice. But yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. As I've been trying to be Kimmy's pie slice for I've offended half the audience.
Zing.
All two of them.
What are we talking about? So, how does it feel leaving this show?
I'm sad, but I'm hoping to see you guys in San Diego. I'll be honest with you. I've been on the show, I think, 15 times.
Yeah.
And wow. I probably know the least amount about comic books, and I've written 3 songs for you guys.
Yay.
I wrote a song for their wedding.
Whoa. We didn't get with you.
Alex.
You three got married.
Yeah. We didn't invite you because it was very intimate.
I didn't know.
Very intimate occasion.
We had a wedding pie. Actually, you did have a wedding pie.
Yeah.
I was a large slice of it.
That's a nice
one.
What's crazy to think about is she wrote a song for your wedding, and then Matt married me and my wife.
That's actually a true thing. I was a minister at Pete's wedding. I became a minister for Pete to do his wedding.
I needed to know a little bit more about this show.
What is your deep personal relationship?
And not to be left out.
What club do you think is the cutest?
We'll get into that. That's the bulk of the show. Not to be left out, Matt is going to impregnate my girlfriend. give birth to a half Matt child.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I want to talk to you. I was having a hard time with the popsicle thing, so I think we got to do the old-fashioned
way. I requested the old-fashioned way. I don't know why. You keep bringing up this popsicle.
She said something very different.
Well, women.
Anyway. Let's get back to the topic of comic books.
Yeah.
Kimmy, you were out in L.A. recently, or?
No, it was actually here in New York.
Oh, well,
I'm
it was
sorry.
Here in New York.
It was
oh,
here.
My
I'm
God.
Sorry.
Okay,
I'm
that was
sorry
a bad segue then.
No.
But
no.
You were here in New York, and you auditioned for something.
Yes, the new Scott Pilgrim movie.
Yeah!
So what can you tell us about it?
What can I tell you about it? Well, the character, what was the name of the girl again? Envy. I'm such a fan of Scott Pilgrim. I auditioned for Envy, and from what I gathered, she's supposed to be a redhead, but they kind of made her into an ice princess, like a blonde ice princess. And she didn't quite seem as like punk rock as I thought that from the comic books. So, and they had the script under very secret surveillance. Yes.
Oh wow.
So I read an old script, which Alex, I think, read, and then they have rewritten it since.
Oh, wow.
It was awesome, though.
You auditioned for Ramona, am I right?
Yeah, I auditioned for Flowers. I didn't get it.
Really?
Oh,
yes, man, your accent.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Ramona Flowers. That was my
So I called Alex the morning of the audition, and I said, what do you know about this thing? Is it, what do you know?
And I was like, I don't know.
You guys are talking on a team canvas.
We live across the alley from each other.
When you go to LA, they use more cellular phones to communicate.
What is that?
Well, you'll figure out when they hand them to you when you get off the phone.
Like,
they're like tin cans, but with buttons.
Yes.
In any case, good luck on
Thanks.
That, I guess.
Thanks. Yeah, Michael Cera is the is Scott Pilgrim. And I thought that I was probably too old to have sex with him, you know?
Well,
never too old. I think Michael Cera should be the judge of that.
Yeah. And that, you probably won't actually have to do that during the movie.
Probably not. It'll be like, boop, 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 boop,
but you're not
right?
against it either.
It'll be done in 8-bit animation.
Michael Cera is an adorable man.
Yeah. He's only 20, though. He's 20.
Did you read for the part?
I wish I did. All I tried to, I just showed up and offered to have sex with Michael Cera. Somehow they didn't let me in the room.
Weird.
Tom, let's turn it over to you for
Tom,
a little bit.
The real expert.
The actual guest.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got into comics.
How I got into comics?
Yes.
I went to school with Scott Lobdell and total riding his coattails the whole way into Marvel's offices one day. It was a time when Scott and I had gone to theater school together, and talked about, you know, as kids talked about the X-Men and what we would do if we were writing them, if we were writing Spider-Man, what we would do with different books. And then Scott pursued that into Marvel, and I went off and had a semi-successful acting career, but went
Tell
back
us
to
about that.
Tell us.
No, let's talk more about Marvel. It's a lot. But there was a time in the mid-90s when, or early 90s, when Marvel was really just filling seats. They were just looking for warm bodies. Anybody who could rub two, you know, thoughts together would be able to would be able to pretty much walk in and get a job. And for some reason, I was in the office one day with Scott and was speaking with Kelly Corvacy, who was the editor on a bunch of the X titles at the time, and said that I really wanted to write classic X-Men, which was reprints of the old stuff, and he thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. Apparently nobody here thinks it was funny.
Everybody here is an aspiring classic X-Men writer.
Yeah. They take that dick.
That's the laugh I was looking for.
Yeah.
I watched
older episode of Comic Book Club.
I pitched an X-Factor story that was supposed to be a utility story, something that they would have on hand in case they needed to fill an issue, inventory story. And the same week that I turned that in, Mark DeMatteis said he wanted to leave the book, and the editor said, how would you like to write X-Factor? And I went right in and walked right in off the street onto an X book.
That is crazy.
Which Bob Harris thought was crazy. So I didn't stay on it very long. But the Spider-Man grabbed me. No, I stayed on it for 10 issues. For
wow.
A little more than 10 issues. And But the Spider-Man offices had already tapped me and wanted me to come over and do that, and that just snowballed into insanity at the time. So that's my story.
And of course, now you're working on For Happenauts.
I'm working on my own creator-owned book For Happenauts. Woo! Which I, as well as you, which came out a little more regular, but my partner, my co-creator there, Craig Rousseau, is drawing Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane at the time. He's also a stay-at-home dad all day with two little kids, and so you can, when I talk to him on the phone, I can hear them yelling, Uncle Todd, Uncle Todd. And so we get it out as fast as we can. We're at about a month and a half lead. Right now, that's what we're shooting for. But I think our Halloween issue is going to come out for Christmas, so I hope you enjoy that.
Well, for those who don't know, what's the general pitch?
The premise is I was always fascinated with the paranormal and cryptozoology and UFOs and ghosts and all that crazy stuff that you hear about on Coast to Coast AM every night if you stay up really late. And
yeah, Coast to Coast.
That's great. Just after I did TELUS with Mike Moringo, which was our chance to do our fantasy, our idea of what a big fantasy epic saga would be, Craig Rousseau and I were kicking around, and he said, why don't you just write something you want that'll be fun? And I have all this information in my head about all these crazy, weird things that have happened throughout history. And so, to answer your question, the For Happenauts is kind of like the X-Files meets something else, and except
ooh,
instead of
double mysterious
Mulder, yeah, I was going to say The Simpsons, but it's not really that anymore. Instead of Mulder and Scully, the agents from this—it's like BPRD, which is what everybody says. It's a lot like BPRD, and a lot of people wrote us off as being too much like BPRD without giving us a chance. And it's much more of an adventure book. It's much more of a team. The team really interact a lot. They're like a little family, so we get to have fun. We have our little comic relief guy, Chupi, who's a Chupacai, a blood-sucking freak. And there's a Bigfoot on the team, a Mothman, a ghost, a psychic. So,
happy about Bigfoot.
Well, it's a great group of... I mean, if you're going to have like a sci-fi team, you know, instead of... unlike BPRD, it's kind of just like a couple of different guys. It's quite an array of Mothman and Bigfoot.
That's
awesome.
They're very different creatures. It reminds me a lot of the vibe of the Fantastic Four when it was like, we are adventurers and not mired in like getting a divorce and stuff.
Are these guys headed towards divorce? Family travails?
There are family travails already. Anybody who's read, we started out and we had an initial first run, first four issue series from Dark Horse that we followed up with a second one. But Dark Horse didn't really give us a lot of, I might get bitter here, didn't give us a lot of promotion. Craig and I would go to conventions and go over to the Dark Horse booth, and we couldn't find our book anywhere.
Wow.
They didn't give us any kind of boost, any kind of a real advertising for the book, which I would think would be in their best interest. They should sell their own product. But they didn't, and as I was working...
They were like, perhaps not.
Perhaps not.
Nailed it.
That was sweet.
Let's just play that back.
Just play it back in your head.
When Mike and I were working on the TELUS hardcover to collect everything at Image, the Image guy said, how are you doing over there with that For Happenauts? And I said, not so good. And he said, come on over, we'll show you. So Eric Stevenson and Joe Keating and Eric Larson at Image, we can't thank them enough. They really got behind the book. They got a lot of noise out there about it.
Yeah.
And it's picking up momentum. A lot of people are starting to see that it's fun, it's exciting. I'm trying to add a little more horror to it. So we're getting aspects of everything in there. For a long time, people have been calling it a family book. And there are elements in it that are not so family.
Like what?
People getting their heads bit off and
you've never met my family.
So come on!
Well, anyway, it's a great book, and we'll definitely talk more about it, but it's time to turn over to our first section, which we like to call The Stack.
Yeah!
Okay, first statement.
I didn't write that one.
No?
I'll work on it.
Damn.
It's cool.
you can write the song that goes like
stack.
All right, first issue we're going to talk about Final Crisis number 4. We've been a bit back and forth on this series. What do you think about this issue?
It started to come together a little bit. This one had a lot of the feel of Infinity Gauntlet to me, which I liked. I liked that it was coming. They had the big wall of heroes with X's over some of them. So that's
it was.
That's all I need to make me happy. I love the Ray. The Ray was in this.
You like the Ray and walls with X's on them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
This was like insane. Then there was a touching moment between two flashes, and then went back to crazy time.
Wait, between two flashes? Like
yeah.
the
like,
character flash?
Yeah,
flash. Or like,
they didn't kiss.
Two of the character flashes. See? Look at that.
See?
Oh.
That is man-on-man action.
Flash on flash.
It's
okay.
A
flash on flash.
This series is very back and forth for me. I feel like most of the action is taking place between the scenes, and I feel like Grant Morrison is doing it on purpose. He's almost being a dick in a way. To be like, I can write whatever I want, so you know what? I'm going to not write the important information.
And he's
just
saying, let it happen in your imagination.
Yeah.
He's not like Willy Wonka in that way.
If Willy Wonka was a dick. Oh, he was. Okay.
Darkseid did not like the issue. The last page.
There's some good stuff in here. There are some good scenes, emotional scenes with the flashes. There's a good emotional scene with Black and Arrow.
Wow. That's their child's name.
Jordan.
Green Arrow. Thank you. And there's some good art in there, and there is some big stuff. I just wish I understood what was going on.
See, but I think this issue, it is, you do get it. They kind of... The anti-life equation has been this stupid thing where you don't know about it. But now it's just a helmet you put on and then you're evil. So that kind of makes it real.
Oh, the old evil.
Exactly. That's why I don't play football.
I know.
That's the only reason I don't play football. Let me fix my stuff.
Otherwise you'd be playing for the Giants right now?
For the Denver... Yeah, Giants. Whatever.
I know that whenever I read Flash, I like to pretend like he talks as fast as he runs. And then... It makes this conversation between two flashes like amazingly fast.
Yeah,
it's just, like,
fast
really
on
good.
Fast.
How are there two flashes? How?
There's like 4 or 5 of them actually.
Oh Christ!
To be fair, one of the flashes in the scene has been dead for 25 years, but he outraced a time bullet, and now he's back alive.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's how fast he is.
You gotta watch out for those time bullets.
Now, was this I did not read the book. Is this a portion of a greater story, or could it be read as a standalone?
No,
not a chance.
Yeah,
it's possible all 7 issues couldn't be read as a standalone story.
Yeah, that's why I have not read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about this is Grant Morrison is in the stage right now where he's doing both with this and with Batman.
He's like, how much of a dick should I be?
And oh, I know how much of a dick. I'm going to find one issue from Batman or a Jack Kirby New Gods thing from, I don't know, 1953, and then base an entire series on it.
Yeah.
And
there's an old man somewhere who's like, I get it all! It's glorious!
you think Frank Miller set the bar for dick, and that's what he's shooting for? Or is it...
Where is the bar for dick?
Frank Miller must be the guy who's doing it.
We're going to the bar for dick. That's where your bachelor party.
Your guys.
That's where I meet all my men. Hello. All my flashes. Five ways with flash.
Yes.
Okay.
Doesn't take very long.
No.
Hey. Come on.
Would you say pick this up?
No.
Let's
move on. Talk about
a lot of journalism happening over here. A lot of real blogging journalism. It's kind of like a dick bar for dick.
I don't wear a newsman's hat. All right.
To be fair, newspapers do that about the election as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of articles I read that are just like, he's a dick. Anyway, New York Times.
Yeah.
All right, Secret Invasion number 7, the penultimate issue for this globe-spanning series.
Oh, finally.
Skrulls are trying to take over the Marvel Universe. What'd you think about this issue?
They've taken their time taking over. That's for sure. This is like kind of the big fight issue, and I was pretty bummed about it when I heard about it. And that was actually a better read than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I would definitely say this book is better than you think it's going to be. It's there's a lot of action, which is enjoyable for someone like me, but they do give you some things to ponder at the end. And I feel like really, if I'm going to be a secret invasion of aliens, the first person I'm going to pretend to be is Jarvis. I mean, that is just first person you're going
to
go.
It goes back to the butler.
Yeah.
The butler did it.
Yeah. Who leaves their baby with the butler?
Oh, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, he's one of the bad guys.
Now I read the first issue and the special get you ready for the issue, whatever they called that. Not a prologue. They had some other name for it. And I feel that I'm fairly well versed in all the characters in the Marvel Universe and what they're all about. And I did not recognize about 5 different people in that first issue.
What?
And they didn't go to the point of just explaining them to me. Which, to me, and maybe I'm an old school writer and I should be left out of here, but I think that in the beginning, is that the way to go?
Yeah.
I'm on my way. I do think that it's a writer's job. It's their responsibility to make sure that their readers, and not just those of us who consider ourselves well-versed in Marvel folklore, that it's their responsibility when you first see a character to somehow acknowledge them. Not anything so gratuitous as actually giving me a whole caption worth of who this character is, but that would be helpful. But the reason that I ran away from it, Infinite Crisis, was some of the characters were drawn so small, and I didn't know who they were. I know everybody in the DC Universe, but I couldn't see them in the panel, and no one was calling them by name, and they were saying, oh, this happened to me before, when?
Yeah.
And then I read in the back, though, that Dan DiDio said there actually was a website I could go to find out what
that's
was
bullshit.
In my comic
that's
book.
Bullshit. That's so true. That's what the
if
problem
need,
is.
If I need a website to be able to refer to what I'm supposed to be enjoying, then I'm not going to buy the book. Yeah.
It brings up a good point, because I feel like that's definitely one thing that I don't get upset about. When the first couple of pages, when you have characters, a lot of times they'll do a little thing with their name. You know, they were doing that for the Legions for a while, which I enjoyed. They just give you, they have the picture, and then they'll just later just put in their name, so
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it doesn't help with the Legion, because there's 36 of them.
Yeah. But I just feel that, it's definitely, I don't get bothered by it, even though I maybe know who it is.
Don't mind not knowing what's happening.
No, I don't mind them reiterating who it is.
Oh, yeah.
This.
Yeah. I can name every single person.
Every single
character. But
that is Tree, and Hand.
Jordan and I talk all the time about the fact that every comic book should be treated like somebody's first comic book. If you hand this to somebody...
You mean Jordan, the guy who works at our booth.
Jordan right here.
Hey, buddy!
Hey!
Here's my pal, Jordan. And that's it's true. There is a new readership. There's an older readership, and we don't need that all the time. We don't need our handheld. But in our first image issue of the Perhaponauts, I made sure that every time a new character was introduced, we got a little blip about what they were, what their powers were, what they could do. And I did it once. I'll do it once every couple of issues, just to make sure that somebody who picks that book up isn't totally lost.
Yeah.
They say that everything should be accessible. You really need to make sure the comics are. We all take it for granted because we've been reading them for.
Have you guys
like
know?
6 months?
Do you guys know people? You talked about comic people
because
It seems like a lot of people are in agreement here. Do you guys know writers who don't feel that way, who are like?
Well,
I don't think it's necessarily people don't feel that way, but something like when you're looking at. Marvel makes an effort, I do think, with their events, for the most part, definitely more than DC does, to make it new reader friendly. But that usually only extends as far as, I think, the log line. Something like Civil War, they sold it as, it's heroes fighting heroes. This is aliens posing as heroes invade the Marvel Universe. But then once you get into it and all that up, I do think you're right that there's a lot of stuff, especially in this, even more so than Civil War, where Bendis has been building up the stuff in his head for so long that there's no way of getting in if you haven't been reading every single Avengers book before this.
And it's a thing, like, it was cool for a while to use, like, C and D level characters and make give them the spotlight. It's like, oh, and it's, like, nostalgic and stuff. And this is kind of the next logical step where it's like, we're going to take this one issue and base a whole important Batman story on the fact that one time he went to an alien world and everything was in a different color. So it's like, why that only satisfies a very narrow part of readership.
And what about these, like, websites? But, like, there's no official website, right? It's not like in the comic book they're, like...
Yeah, it literally is. It's like, check out Marvel.com and we'll have more information on who these people are.
Don't know who you're reading? Marvel.com!
There you go. Would you say pick this up?
The next issue should be interesting.
Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about another continuity-heavy issue. Superman New Krypton Special, number one.
All right.
What do you guys think about this?
Well, this is very much like Superman... babysitting people from another planet. Like, hey guys, don't touch that. Hey guys, come on. Hey guys, put that endangered whale back. Don't punch whales. Oh, guys, come on. My mom's going to come home.
It's very, he's very much the
Is this a problem that you ran into, punching a lot of whales?
Me? Yeah. Oh, nah, I was looking through.
I think this is secretly about immigration.
Possibly true.
That's deep.
No, actually, as a matter of fact, I think it's based around the businesses around the train tracks from my hometown.
That's... Do you really think that's true?
I think that this Superman is about how a lot of the Latino community moved in and moved the black community out, and all the business went from black to Latino around my train station, my hometown.
Yeah, you're now the issue.
That's probably... Say no more.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Whale punching. Dick Marr for you, pal.
That's true. There was a lot of whale punching in Redneck New Jersey.
If you haven't been reading it, in the most recent issue of Action Comics, Pa Kent died, and so part of this is Superman being very sad about surrogate father dying, and it's really great, really well drawn. And then, at the same time, the bottle city of Kandor has been re-enlarged right next to the Fortress of Solitude. And Superman's like, alright guys, let's relax, everyone keep it cool, don't go flying around, and then he turns around and all of the Kryptonians are now flying around the world, getting ready to have a wicked party, as Pete said. And that makes Superman the Theo Huxtable trying to stop the kid from dancing on the table.
Crazy Cosby reference.
This issue is very good, actually, I think. Johns has been doing a great job on the title. I think Robinson has been struggling a little bit, James Robinson with Superman, but he does as well a good job here. It really sets up stuff for Superman, and I think this is the first time that Superman has really mattered in a very long time.
Yeah, and it's really well drawn. It's a great issue across the board.
Yeah. Definitely pick that up.
Please, pick it up.
Hooray!
If you All right,
let's
whales,
move on and
it.
Talk about Amazing Spider-Man 574.
Oh, boo. What? Oh. Just kidding.
No, it's kind of true.
Yeah!
This issue was very sad.
Yeah. Well, wait, no, she was saying boo, not boo-hoo.
Boo.
No,
just, okay.
That's right.
You can start and work it.
Yeah. Oh,
nice
okay.
Go ahead.
In this issue, Flash Thompson, who used to be Peter Parker's bully, has gone to fight in Iraq, and horrible things happen to him. Yeah.
Well, it's a story based off a letter that Steve Wacker got that he decided to make into a comic book. It's a touching story that's supposed to be true. So, I mean, that part of it is kind of cool, the fact that they would reach out to someone who's fighting overseas and be like, hey, we're going to dedicate this comic to you. I mean, that part is...
It's really sad. After you read the issue, then you read the letters page, and it tells the whole story. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of issue comics. We've talked about this here before on the show. But issue comics in general, I don't think work. Things like where, you know, they deal with AIDS or drug use or things like that. The prime example is when North Star came out. He was the first big gay character for Marvel. And it was the worst handled thing ever. There's this character called the Bounty, and he's fighting the Bounty.
The Mounty?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You would love
it. Really good
I would love it. Come here, Taylor.
There's a pitcher and catcher duo. They were very, very proactive, very pro-gay.
Yeah.
You wrote Spider-Man for a very long time. What do you think about the current continuity, what's going on in this title right now?
I don't know what to say. I kind of lost track along the way. I think that Joe Straczynski, what is he likes to be called, Joe, right? Joe Straczynski came on the book. I had kind of lost the rhythm of Spider-Man. I felt that the essence of Spider-Man wasn't there. So I wasn't reading Spider-Man for a long, long time. I'd come and, you know, I've tried jumping back in and checking out the continuity. And so something like that, I think it's important because there really were never any big, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to think of five different ones, big issues, you know, where they were tackling something socially relevant. I know that that's not true. When you go back through the 60s, he was always doing that. But it had been a long, long time before they were doing that. These kind of issues, they are nice. They're and not only are they nice to maybe make some people aware of something that's going on that they're not aware of, but...
Yeah, I hadn't heard of this Iraq war.
Yeah, oh, it's
apparently it's been going on for a while.
But at the same time, it also marks history for us. When I go back and I look at comics from the 60s and the 70s, and they actually relate to what's going on, you know, Superman met JFK, and the Fantastic Four met the Beatles, those kind of things. When you see things like that, that's going way back. But when you see things like that in a run of a comic book, it gives you a sense of that time and place. And they don't. Both companies are terrified of doing that these days.
Yeah. Last issue, Spider-Man met Stephen Colbert.
There you go.
Really? And I can't believe I booed the Iraq War one. You know, how did I do that? I just picked them up.
Oh, I think it's a good point, and I think this works well as an issue.
Yeah, it's a good issue.
It's probably actually a Mark Guggenheim's best written issue on Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. I also say that, like, coming to see the show before, there have been other times where basically that there was a movement to start incorporating the war into other comics that you guys discussed, and that because they did it, you know, years ago, and this sounds like the best way to handle it so far that I've seen, rather than just have, like, Batman go in and, like, kill Saddam Hussein. It's probably better to do it this way.
You know, Frank Miller actually was going to write a thing called Batman Holy Terror, where he went after Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Now so that's like being a dick. Am I right?
Well,
that's
like
terrible.
That's a double shot at the dick bar.
Yeah.
pick this up, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
cool. Let's move on. Talk about Psyblade number one.
Yeah!
Basically... Well, okay, we were talking about how it's difficult to get into characters, right?
Well, this comic's about keeping clean, obviously. If you were to look at the cover and be like, oh, yeah, showering is important for women, at least, anyway.
Do you need me to vouch for that?
Yeah, please. That's why we had you on the show.
Would you say showering is important?
Yeah.
And the other thing you learn is always take your clothes off before you take a shower.
Yeah.
Well...
Especially if you're bleeding purple from your eyes. Here's the deal with this issue. This is the first issue of a character called Psyblade that I've never really read before. She's from some team in Top Cow universe who nobody reads.
You're talking down in the comic.
I guess I am. But this is the amount of description that happens in the first issue to set up the first issue. So getting back to, again, what we're talking about, I read this and I still didn't understand what was happening. Then I read the issue and I still had no idea what was happening. This is the first issue of the comic.
And a character, again, should be defined by their actions. I mean, we all have heard that in our story, you know, writing stories, creative writing classes. Character is defined by what they do. Really, on the first couple of pages, you should show them doing what they do.
Yeah.
And that should help anybody who's reading this for the first time say, oh, okay, I get it. That's what's going on.
By my philosophy, what this character does is fall asleep.
A lot. That's her power.
Yeah, the first 20 pages or so, she's asleep.
I wanted to do a comic book called Awesome Possum, where he was a narcoleptic superhero. You know, falling down.
Someone kind of took your idea, I think, a little bit.
Well, that's funny because it says on the first page, you know, it's like, how do we control? Like, how do we start a weapon we can't control or something like
what
that?
What good is a weapon you can't control?
That's it. So she just wakes up and says, when do we start? And the answer is not for this issue.
Issue two. Oddly enough.
This is not good.
Yeah. who among us would even buy something like this?
Yeah. I mean, the problem is Pilot Season does an amazing job. Like, all the comics before this were awesome. And they have a contest where you go online, you vote for your favorite comic, and the winner gets published and actually made into a comic book that you can buy at the store. So when you see like award-winning thing on the front, you're like, okay, this is going to be good, even though it's a horrible cover. You still end up with a piece of crap.
Which
there's a nice lesson. You are.
All right, let's move on to talk about Wolverine Manifest Destiny at number one. Thank God, Wolverine, we were talking about B or C level characters finally getting the spotlight. That's really cool. Wolverine is finally getting his own comic book. It's really spotlighted characters. That's really cool.
Yeah. Is that sarcasm, man?
Yeah. Yeah, I like how he pops his claws.
Why do we need another Wolverine book?
Why don't
Pete, why don't you feel this one?
Can there
Destiny?
Be too many?
Hugh Jackman is really attractive.
He appears very rarely in
Manifest Destiny, so he takes a wagon across the West and fights Indians?
It's like Oregon Trail.
You know, Trail of Pete would read that.
Yeah. It's great.
Historical.
No. This is a...
this comic is basically Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh,
except it's Wolverine instead of Kurt Russell. It's really what the
whole thing is. The parallels really don't...
The X-Men.
You can't even compare that. He's not driving a truck. You know, not selling things like, you know... You know what Jack Burton does at a time like this?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Wolverine goes to the Chinatown of San Francisco, and he's like...
He doesn't witness, like, these ghosts, and there isn't, like, someone who steals
a
girl with green eyes.
He's
like, you know what Wolverine wouldn't do?
And then...
No.
Later on, there
it's in Chinatown. That's the only comparison you can
make. No, it's like...
To be fair, there's also ghosts.
And there's Big Trouble, too.
Yeah.
A lot of trouble.
Damn you, Kimmy Gateway.
What? Well, thank you. We convinced him.
This is okay.
No, I think it's... Why not have a Wolverine story where you get to know a little bit more?
The question
about
I ask you is why?
Well, I'm just saying that Wolverine is a well-known badass. He's done a lot of crazy shit in his life. Wouldn't it be cool if he went back to a town and they were like, oh, how
almost,
dare you walk back in?
Almost here? Too much crazy shit, to be honest. Like, yeah. Literally, he has to have spent his entire life running from town to town. Stabbing people, getting into trouble, and being like, I'm never coming back here again.
Yeah.
And then running to the next town, causing some more trouble, and then accidentally coming back to those
towns. Becomes like, it's like Wolverine's the Forrest Gump of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, come on. That's a ridiculous comparison.
No, he shows up, they're running all these retcon things where he was like in all these different crazy events in the Marvel Universe.
He was in a lot of events.
Yeah,
actually, in this page, Storm is on the ledge listening to Freebird, wondering not whether to commit suicide. Yeah.
I guess I'm the only one who got that.
I got it. I love it.
That was great.
That was the
most obscure Forrest Gump reference I've ever heard.
But that was a really bracing scene when she's up there and he was like, hands burn, you cannot. Well, and she was uncomfortable.
And she made it rain.
Let's go watch Forrest Gump. Yeah, she made it rain.
Miss Marvel 32 came. This takes us back to when Miss Marvel was a fighter pilot before she had powers, and the time when she was stripped down to her underwear and had her hand smashed until it was hanging off by a ribbon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I should audition for this.
There you go.
There.
Audition for the comic book.
Yeah, basically, so...
Michael Cera plays the hand smasher.
Miss Marvel gets captured in Afghanistan and is tortured horribly.
For
half the book. What did you guys think about this? Is this too much?
I don't know, it's... Reading, I mean, there are a lot of torturings in comic books, movies, everything. And this one, especially, I was like, oh, when this guy comes with a giant hammer and smashes her forearm.
Oh.
Yeah, right? That's what I was... So it was very shocking.
What are those?
What are those? Those are electric rods that he...
Yeah.
Electric blue rods?
Yeah.
They it's mainly used on female people that go to torture.
Oh, really?
It's just a weird picture of a guy with like a dirty look on his face, like holding a rod, like you're in trouble now, lady. Yeah.
What do you do in your spare time?
I don't know, but I don't know. Just things like that, seem weird. Like the fact that she was in her bra and panties the whole time when she was supposed to be getting tortured, I was just like, I feel it's like. Either torture the girl or have a TNA moment. It's just a weird cross between
don't
the blank.
Combining the two.
Yeah, it's a weird. I don't understand. You know, like
it always is funny to me that whenever the in comics, it seems like the strongest females still have to be have this kind of sexual thing no matter what. So like, even though they're like right. On paper, this is I'm serious.
I was going to take off.
Oh, why do I talk?
His words stop you.
No, but like it's like this on paper. This is a very like empowering story for females to emulate. But then when you watch it, it's very like totally dude like girls in prison erotic art. So
and fucking two prodding her.
Yeah, and it's like, I'd rather just watch it with the sound off.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can,
wow.
You can cover up the words with your
each frame, like, just, no.
No, they're not speaking.
No.
I actually like this issue. I didn't think it was very intense, and I think both the artist and the writer treated it in the right way.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying about the underwear and the electric blue rods and whatnot, but
my electric blue rod.
I actually do think they struck a balance, which I was very surprised about, because I was ready for it to cross a line.
Why couldn't they torture her with their clothes on? Why rip her down to a bra and pants? You know what I mean? Like that.
Well, that's kind of what torturers do. Right?
I don't know. I've never been tortured, I guess.
You've never been tortured?
After the show, we'll go to the dick bar and take care of it. number seven, last Stick issue we're going to talk about. Justin, you like this issue.
Justin, I
am down on this comic.
I love when Justin likes something, he scooches up to
it's like, time to get into it. it's two stories. In the first half, you get to Mr. Fix-It, the Gray Hulk, kind of comes back. Which is, I love that character, great to see him. And the second one, a bunch of girls go after the Red Hulk. It's kind of dumb, but it's a good read. Art's great.
I feel like I've been enjoying the other ones up until this, but I just feel like too much was piled onto this issue. Like, Joe Fix-It shows up to fight Wendigos. Okay, fine. Then all of a sudden, Moon Knight comes out of nowhere and starts fighting Joe Fix-It. Okay, what happens with the Wendigos? Nobody knows. And then the Century and Miss Marvel show up at the end. It's like, it's just too much happening for me to really take in one thing. And then it just seems like once I get used to one thing, another thing gets thrown in, and then it just...
I really think it's just Jeff Loeb writing it on his lunch break of Heroes is pretty much what's going on.
He should be writing Heroes on his lunch break of Heroes.
Oh!
That's terrible.
The art's fine in this. The writing, it's silly.
The art is
silly stuff.
If you can get over the fact that it's not actually a comic book, but just silly whatever comes in Jeff Loeb's head, it's fine. And as long as nobody else has to pick up on the plot points of this, it's also
Rolk.
Totally fine.
Red Hulk.
Oh, Red Hulk. Gotcha.
Yeah. Rolk.
Rolk.
I didn't make it up.
What is Orange Hulk? Rolk.
Coming soon. Coming soon.
Oh, spoiler.
And then
spoiler.
Hulk. The Yellow Hulk.
Yellow Hulk.
Magenta Hulk. Mulk.
Joke.
Would you still pick it up?
No, still no.
I would say yes, just because you can get a...
Because you'll buy anything.
Well, no, because I like Jeff Loeb.
Nice what?
Guy. I can't wait for Hulk.
It's going to be great. That's it for the stack! All right, it is time for our next section, which is our favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. For that, we're going to go to Jordan, our replacement.
Jordan!
Jordan!
Hello!
I thought that was hilarious because Justin liked it, Pete didn't, and Justin said, don't pick it up, and Pete said, do pick it up.
You never know what's going to happen on this show.
That was a twist. That was good. So, this first question.
It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Is actually about comic books.
All right.
And I think it's probably for Tom. What comic project that fell through for whatever reason are you most sorry never happened?
Who is that?
We'll get to that. Easy.
What's that about?
I just don't know if any of the editors in the audience. I was scheduled to write Young Justice back when, just before it was launched. I did a two prestige issue story called World Without Grownups, JLA World Without Grownups, that brought Impulse, Superboy, and Robin together. And I had worked very hard on several treatments to try to work out 16 issues. 16? No, 18 issues, so that all the different offices at DC would approve it. The Batman offices had Robin, and the Superman offices had Superboy, and the Flash offices had Impulse. And I had written up these crazy, wacky adventures, and just an outline. But it came and it went, and it came. Went back and forth, and I was still kind of new in the business, and the editor at the time was Eddie Braganza, who we have agreed was also new, and we just got to a certain point where he just lied to me too many times. Is that being too blunt? That was the one that I invested an awful lot of time, and when I finally had to walk away, it was because I was just I just didn't trust the editor at the time, and I think since then we've kind of paved the way. If he hears this, he probably changes his mind. But I think we came a long way. But at the time, there was a lot. I invested a lot into it, and suddenly it was gone. So that broke my heart a little bit.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Sorry. Good answer.
That was really
good. Who asked that question?
Just raise your hand.
Pete is going to get you a gift.
Yeah.
Yay. Surprise from Pete.
Yay. Let's get the last question.
Jordan, next.
Oh, sorry. No. Next question. I don't know what this is about because it doesn't give any context, but it says, who are you going to vote for next week? Is there something?
Whoa.
Oh, what? Vote for what?
Batman.
Yeah. Polk.
Wow, this is interesting.
Polk.
Polk is Polk Dot Hulk.
Polk
is going to vote for.
He's also a gay character.
Now the journalism's on that context. Yeah,
cool. All right, fine. Barack Obama. That's a vote for.
Me too, Barack Obama.
Yeah, there you go.
Why, is it weird to talk about?
You're driving
it
as well.
Uh-oh, McCain's reporter. McCain's reporter.
That actually was
That
Cindy
was
McCain.
Not the answer she was getting.
That was Cindy McCain.
Oh, really?
She's trying to pick up votes here.
She's like,
doesn't look good for McCain.
John, I'm gonna stop by somebody can pick up literally a handful of them.
They are investing poorly. What's the big investment? One ticket to comic book books.
Yeah, Barack Obama is getting 30 minutes on most of the major networks. McCain put all of his money into comic books. these are all the tickets he can buy. cool. Who asked that question?
All right, Tom.
Let's get another question.
It's got a smattering of answers there.
Last question I've got, I guess it's kind of like, I don't know if the person knows the answer and they're quizzing us or what, but it's, why do pregnant ladies pee so much?
Oh. I'm glad you asked that.
Well, these are some good comic book questions.
Well, because she's paying for two.
You believe that? Well, in the DC universe, it's because back in the day, the new gods, in the Marvel universe, the Watcher lost a bet to Dormammu, and that's why.
I actually am writing a comic about educational pregnancy comic.
Oh.
Where pregnant women are all in their bra and panties and we torture them.
We? You're in the comic? Congratulations.
I'm going to play Matt Donnelly, though.
Yeah.
In the movie.
And Michael Sarah's going to play the pregnant lady.
Oh, too young. I'll never
do that. I got sex with that pregnant lady. Who asked that question?
Wow. The bathroom season, they've been going after this formula that was written basically like on a napkin and then toward
in pencil.
Yes, in pencil.
Wait, was it Tim Gunn who wrote it? Or
yeah.
No?
I don't know who wrote this episode.
Well, Kenley pioneered. Tim, we gotta write down this formula.
Ripped into two pieces. The bad guys got the two pieces back together, and finally in this episode, we saw that they had scanned it into a computer. Now, let's say, sake of argument, you had two pieces of formula ripped in half. You scan them to a computer. How would you display that?
Scan into a computer. Wait, okay.
Yeah, scan into a computer.
You scan into a computer.
On a monitor.
Yeah, you put them together on a monitor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
Well, if you're heroes, what you do is you keep them separate and put them on two monitors 10 feet apart. Now, here's a second scenario.
I like how that part bothered me.
Right.
All the crazy shit going on in heroes.
Second scenario for you, right?
Second scenario, you have a character that can't keep control of her electricity, okay?
Okay.
It's just going crazy. She's shooting electricity everywhere. Right. You got to get to another place. What mode of transportation would you use?
Bicycle.
Iron car.
Really? Because if you were heroes, you would use an airplane, which would then shockingly almost fall out of the air.
Well, yeah, but the only way...
I have a third scenario.
Put her as a lifeguard on a giant pool on wheels filled with endangered aquatic animals.
Let me ask you a question, Matt. Matt, you're a bad guy, right? I'm a bad guy, okay?
Oh.
I'm a bad guy. You're a good guy. You're hidden away in a room.
Oh,
let's say this room,
yeah,
okay? And you know I'm going to come in through a door, right? The door is over there in the room.
Okay.
And you decide you're going to knock me out with like a folding chair or something
like that.
Where would you stand to knock me out?
Probably right at the opening of the door.
Because if you were on Heroes, you would stand all the way over there. This show is terrible. And I bring specifically these things up to point out that like that's the least of their problems.
Exactly.
Every single thing.
Those are very
true. It's so bad.
Well, they film it on Jeff Loeb's lunch break from writing The Hulk. Put a lot of time into
like,
well, yeah, one
I think that takes lunch a lot.
Yeah, sure.
No, but the thing about it is, because it obviously is a disaster on multiple levels, only because the last thing you described is not a writing issue.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the last thing of having a guy just come from too far away to hit with a chair is not...
It's
like,
stupid. It's a
yeah,
dumb
it's,
guy
it's,
issue.
It's, yeah, it's like literally like a blocking
and
issue.
Then later on in this episode, by the way, this dumb guy escapes from the facility, finally, I don't know how, but he escapes from the facility, and then he's like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna go back and talk to this other guy, and then he walks back into the main office where the evil guy is, and he's like, hey, we gotta get out of here, but he doesn't seem to have any need, he doesn't even see any, he's basically like, hey, we should go. Are you ready to go now?
To the guy he just beat up to get out?
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, it's a great show.
So.
How many more episodes are they gonna make?
Million. They have an unlimited amount of story ideas that don't make any sense.
Let me ask you this. First off, the problem I had with the whole chair thing is after he was doing the run, and then the guy uses his powers to knock away the chair, he does the, oh, where'd the chair go? And then when he turns back around and gets punched, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Anyways, now, do you think this is bad for comics since the show is tanking? Or do you think it was good for comics because, hey, it was out there and it did good for a little while?
I think it's...
Like anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think Heroes is specifically bad for comics. I would say the Spirit movie is bad for comics. That's an entirely different
topic.
Does
Frank
Miller
know that there's a comic book that movie is based on?
I don't think he's ever read it.
No, no. Absolutely not.
Frank Miller loves time motion. So he's doing...
If we listen now, we can hear Will Eisner spinning in his grave.
Yeah.
Just because they're playing the preview someplace.
It's so awful. Anyway, we'll probably talk about that another time. Let's move on to actually talk about something I think we're all, or hopefully all, excited for, which is the Avengers movie. They just announced that Jon Favreau is going to be executive producing it. Also, Robert Downey Jr. is definitely going to be Iron Man in it, and Don Cheadle is definitely going to be War Machine in it, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, what do you guys think about this? What were you be looking forward to in an Avengers movie?
Well, if they can pull off having all these movies and keeping all the actors from the individual, the Thor movie, the Captain America movie, and obviously the Iron Man movie, and bring them all into this Avengers movie, it's going to be an amazing Hollywood trick, and it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And with Jon Favreau kind of helming the whole thing, that's...
Will it be awesome, or will it be like Spider-Man 3, where there's just so much shit going on, you can't really...
If they're smart about it, I mean, it's just... Don't just write it well.
Is there a good example of a multiple character good movie? I mean, like, most of the good superhero movies
have more than one character.
Shortcuts was excellent. Robert Altman did an amazing job of balancing multiple characters. superhero movies?
But, I mean, like, I think it's very hard to write a good arc
that's
for.
That's
obscure.
Yeah, that was good.
I was busted for
I
some
had, yeah, I have no idea what
sorry.
Was. No, that was, I honestly was like, is Shortcuts a superhero movie?
For a second, I imagined Short Circuit in my head.
I thought
Robert Altman did direct Short Circuit.
Johnny Five.
He's alive again. They're making that again.
Yeah.
I actually don't know if there is. A lot of people would say X-Men, but I think the biggest problem with the X-Men movie is that by the end of the movie, everybody had to take their own individual time to attack the villain. That they're like, okay, it's Cyclops' turn. Now it's Wolverine's turn. Now it's the next person's turn.
Very polite.
Yes.
X-Men 2 did a good job of balancing all the characters and the stories, but I mean, I guess they didn't have to introduce the characters quite as much.
I think Hollywood is starting to get it. I think they're starting to realize that if they want storyboards for their superhero movies, there are comic books available to do that. If they just stick with what they see. I'm a purist. I'd like to see the Spider-Man movie go from panel 1 to panel 2 to panel 3 and make it look a little bit like Ditko. If we have to chop off a piece of Tobey Maguire's head, so be it. But
no.
But you...
He's beautiful.
Okay. Doesn't he always look like he's about to bust out crying?
Yeah.
Doesn't he always look like he's just about to start bawling?
Him and Jake Gyllenhaal, you're like, get over it. You're in a movie. Be nice. Show yourself.
The thing about superhero movies is John Favreau. I can't say Brett Favre either. He actually was able to go in as a comic book fan and do what we've all been waiting for all this time. And Hollywood went, oh, that worked. What did he do? He looked at the comic books, you assholes. So that's what I think they're finally starting to do, is you're going to see, I mean, the beginning of Batman Begins, I thought was phenomenal because it really did follow what was great. And then it just descended into an Iron Man movie. You know, every time Bruce Wayne needed something new, he went to Morgan Freeman and said, hey, do we have any gadgets of Wayne Tech to take care of this? And boom, he's gone. You know, it's an extra thing. But with Iron Man, which was a great vehicle for that in more than one way, I think that they're starting to look, and Hollywood's starting to say, oh, we've got to start finding the essence of what's in those comic books and translating that onto the screen. And hopefully, John Favreau will be able to bring that to this as well and not get too many... you know, suits telling him, oh no, you gotta do this, you gotta do that.
Yeah, I think
which happens.
I think one thing I like about Iron Man really that you bring up there is like they don't go too far outside their box. Like they keep it their world. They just keep it very much within that world. And it's almost like Western like.
Mm-hmm.
Where they just kinda set up the showdown and you just anticipate and just keep building action to the showdown. And it's not doesn't go too far outside.
It didn't Hollywood it. You know, all these movies, you see them having to add their little Hollywood touches. They think that Spider-Man's web needs to come out of his wrist. Now, yeah, that looked cool. Visually, it was a cool thing. But that's not Spider-Man. There's something about Peter Parker. There's something about Spider-Man that is said with those web shooters.
Yeah.
There's something about his character that's there that makes you identify with him more. This guy goes out every night because he's so guilty over what happened to his uncle when he could have stopped it. He's not going to let it happen to anybody else's uncle. He goes out there and does that. His way of doing it is so different than Batman's way of doing it, which is the same amount of love and compassion for humanity, but it's masked in a different form. But those things are the things you need to show in each one of those movies. I'm sorry.
No, it's great.
I have a meeting with Hollywood. In about
14
days, you guys.
All right. Go get them, Gabe. Go get them.
Talk about comedy.
Speaking of Hollywood, we are going to show you a movie trailer really quickly from a new movie called Push. So let's check that out.
Ooh.
Here it is.
Okay.
That's great. There's more to it.
Yeah.
I love the green.
No, I'll keep going.
That's called playing.
Did I?
No.
Is everyone's reading the whole thing? It won't play until we've all read the whole thing.
Yeah.
Go play it.
Aww.
Go play
it.
Here it is. Here we go.
There are some people in this world with extraordinary gifts. You don't ask to be special. But we're just born that way.
Ever escaped from division. We have to find her. She's the key to bringing them down.
With her,
Heroes, but good.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.